What I didn't know was that Matsuda was pissed off having to be there that day. He was wrestling 6 days a week, and this was the one day he wasn't scheduled to wrestle. So basically, I was taking him away from his day off. Hell, I'd have been pissed too.
That was the Hulkster himself, Hulk Hogan, telling the story about Hiro Matsuda breaking him into the wrestling business and breaking his leg. If you want to hear the rest of that story and more, you can download a free copy of Hulk Hogan's audiobook right now, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. If you sign up free for 30 days, you're entitled to one free audiobook. Give the service a try and help support the Sound Off, audibletrial.com/Solomonster for your free trial and audiobook right now, brother.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Hulk Hogan has definitely been that rocket fuel that TNA needed.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
I'm fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 315 of the Solomonster Sounds Off here for Saturday, February 22nd, 2014. I am the Solomonster. You can listen to this podcast each and every week on thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, or in iTunes. Thank you, Eric Barraza, Tommy Butler, Andrew Aspie, Omar Gobert, Wayne Baker, and Michael Connolly, all you guys who made donations via PayPal to the Sound Off this week. Thank you. And if you want to make a PayPal donation to support the show, you can do so on thesolomonster.com. That is where the donation box is. It's the only place where you can donate via PayPal. And give what you can in support of the Sound Off. So again, my sincere thanks to those guys who donated this week, and please consider making a donation yourself. Big, big weekend. Hulk Hogan back in WWE. WWE Network set to launch on Monday. Of course, the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view this weekend, so we have predictions, which is always fun. But there's also some other wrestling news out there. In case you didn't know, there is more than just WWE. And as I am recording this today, Ring of Honor is having their HonorCon event in celebration of they just had their 12-year anniversary show last night. And they've been promising this big announcement, this major announcement they've been teasing, and I am of the impression that at the end of the Q&A session this afternoon, they're going to make the formal announcement, so it has not yet been officially made as I am recording this here, although news has leaked about what the announcement is, and it's a big one. It's been rumored that potentially there might be some New Japan Pro Wrestling talent coming over to the States to wrestle at some upcoming Ring of Honor events. Specifically the May 10th show in Toronto and the May 17th show at the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City. And while the announcement has not yet officially been made, it's going to happen sometime while I am recording this. So when the announcement is made, I'll break into it here on the Sound Off. But it looks like some of the biggest stars from New Japan are coming over here to the States. And that includes probably the best wrestler in the world right now, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kazuchika Okada, and a few other names as well. I don't have the whole list of talent that would be coming over, but the two names that jumped out at me when I looked at the announcement, which was broken on the Observer website, was Tanahashi and Okada. Those are the two biggest stars in New Japan Pro Wrestling, the two of the best wrestlers really in the world right now, if you've ever seen any of their matches. Tanahashi alone coming to the States would be a huge announcement, and you know, just the prospect of him coming over to Ring of Honor, and I have no idea what they have planned for him, but you can certainly put him in the ring with a whole bunch of different people, and it would make for an exciting match. Off the top of my head, Tanahashi, AJ Styles, that would be a huge match if they can put that together. Maybe they have a series of tag matches where they pair off, you know, Tanahashi with an AJ Styles against a Ring of Honor heel and a New Japan heel. I don't know. We'll probably know in the next couple of hours, but that is huge, and that makes me very happy because I have tickets to the May 17th Ring of Honor show at the Hammerstein Ballroom. I have not been to an ROH event live since WrestleMania weekend last year. I was at the show where Jay Briscoe won the world title, which was very cool, and used to go to Ring of Honor shows more often, don't go as much anymore, was coaxed into getting tickets by my brother who wanted to go, third row ringside. I said, fine, go ahead. So I'm a happy guy right now, and like I said before, I'll break into the show when the actual announcement is made a little bit later on. I'm sure that it will happen at some point as I am recording this. Quick update for those of you who have been asking me about TV Tracks. I keep getting questions about that all the time. The TV Tracks channel on YouTube I mentioned last week was taken down in error. I mean, there was really no reason for the channel to go down. I said, don't do anything. It's being resolved. It's being worked on. The TV Trax channel, you may have noticed, is now back up. It is back online, although the videos are a little slow to make their return. I think most, I don't know about all, most of those videos that were up will probably be back up. It may just take a little bit of time. And there should be new content popping up there as well. The TV Trax channel is not done. It is not dead. You just have to be patient. And you could see some new content popping up there in the next week or two. So that's all I know. That is the latest and greatest update that I have for you. And when I know more, I will let you know. Was really sorry to hear about the death of Nelson Frazier this past week. That's the former Mabel of Men on a Mission, Viscera, Big Daddy V. He died of a heart attack while in the shower earlier this week. 43 years old. Just celebrated a birthday back on Valentine's Day. It's a sad deal. His wife said recently he had lost about 100 pounds. I guess his doctor told him that he had really high blood pressure, and that kind of scared him into taking better care of himself. So he lost all that weight and still had the heart attack. He won the King of the Ring in 1995, had a brief run with Diesel for the championship during one of the low points for WWE business-wise. I was talking about Naomi's eye injury last week on the Sound Off, her orbital bone fracture, and I kind of joked that maybe she could wear Undertaker's old Phantom of the Opera mask that he had made up for him so he could come back a little bit earlier. That's because Undertaker had his own orbital bone crushed. I think it was his orbital socket was crushed, legit, by Mabel in an angle on Raw that year. And that was probably Mabel's downfall because he didn't last much longer with the company after that. I guess he was hurting a whole bunch of different guys. He came back later on as a member of Undertaker's Ministry of Darkness during the Attitude Era. Then he did the Love Machine gimmick on Raw for a while where he'd hit on Lillian Garcia. Then he had to run his Big Daddy V on their ECW brand where he was managed for a while by Matt Stryker. And then he disappeared. I think he did a couple of movies. I know he had a cameo in Wrong Side of Town, which is an indie movie that Rob Van Dam did a few years ago. He seemed like a cool guy. You know, whenever I would hear him speak on interviews and shoots and that kind of thing, he did a few of those. Really chill, very laid back. You could tell when a guy is well-liked based on, you know, the outpouring of messages on Twitter. And there were a lot of wrestlers on Twitter who were really upset when they found out he died. Todd Grisham used to be an announcer in WWE. Apparently he and, you know, Viscera were pretty good friends. He was all broken up about it, tweeting about it. So it's, you know, it's too bad. 43 is way too young for anybody to go. He clearly was a very large man, was trying to get himself in better shape, and it just didn't work out for him. So very, very sad story there. Let's get into the big news of the week, and there is a lot of it to go over. We'll start with the most recent news. This announcement was made just yesterday. The Hulkster, Hulk Hogan, back with WWE. And not only is he back, he'll be on Raw this Monday night in Green Bay, and he'll be also be on the first Raw postgame show on the network. We'll talk about that in a second. But they also announced his role for WrestleMania 30, and in fact, Hulk Hogan is coming to New Orleans to host WrestleMania 30. So I had many of you send me tweets saying that I had mentioned this a long time ago. Not that I was keeping track, but it was back on Sound Off 301 back in November that I pitched the idea that Hogan would host WrestleMania. Not that I knew anything. And to me, I mean, it really it wasn't like I'm some kind of, you know, genius or anything. It was obvious. I mean, what the hell else is the guy going to do? He could barely move. He's not wrestling. They're not going to clear him. They're not going to let him wrestle. What other conceivable role for Hogan on that show would there be? You know, he's a big enough star that you want to do something with him. You don't just want him to make a cameo in a comedy skit backstage. Maybe you could get away with that with like a Roddy Piper. Hogan's a bigger star. Hogan's too big for that. So what do you do? Is he going to manage somebody? Who's he going to manage? He'll take all the heat away from whoever he manages. Is he going to announce? I don't think he'd be very good in that role. So hosting the show after The Rock did, it just seemed like the most logical choice. And sure enough, that's what they're going to have him do. The way they handled this is kind of interesting. They leaked the news earlier in the day on Friday to TMZ. Clearly, they placed the story. I mean, I'm in PR. I know how this works. And when I tweeted about it, you know, the WWE publicity director favorited my tweet. So clearly, they were going all over Twitter, retweeting people and favoriting different tweets. They were eating this up when that news started spreading. And the TMZ story claimed that he's been training at the Performance Center. In fact, he did train there for a little bit. He never did go in any of the rings. They have 7 rings down there at the Performance Center. He wasn't in the ring bouncing off the ropes and doing any kind of crazy stuff like that. He was there. He worked out for a little bit. They gave him a tour of the facility. They did the photo op. You saw the photo on TMZ of him with all the trainers. Wild for me to look at that picture and see Hulk Hogan and Cara Del Rey, who's a trainer down there, in the same photo together. That was kind of crazy. But a few hours later, WWE made the official announcement. They sent text messages out. They put a press release out making the formal announcement that Hulk Hogan is back. And like I said, it was genius. It was from a PR perspective, it was genius on their part, because Hogan is a big name, and you want to capitalize on that. I mean, I see some people saying, well, why didn't they hype it up on Raw this past Monday? You know, yeah, I guess they could have done that, but they had a certain plan in mind to maximize news exposure, to maximize as much in the way of headlines as they could. And so far, so good. You know it's a big story when CNN runs a crawl on the bottom of their screen mentioning that Hulk Hogan is back in WWE, which is exactly what happened. CNN running the news on their screen. So I'm sure WWE is very happy about that. It's not unlike what they did with Bruno Sammartino when Triple H made the deal to bring Bruno back last year and they let ESPN break the news. You know, comes off as a much bigger deal that way, believe me. It's not as though ESPN got some major scoop, you know, from an inside source. They placed the story with them, and they did the same thing with TMZ, and it's kind of blown up since then. And I mentioned before, Hogan is going to be on Raw Backstage Pass, which is the first post-game show on the WWE Network as soon as Raw goes off the air this Monday night. Also very smart on their part. They want as many eyeballs on that new network as possible. And I mean, Hogan's going to be on Raw. I don't know what he'll do. I don't know if they're going to trot him out there at the very end and he's not going to say anything and they'll save his first words for the post-game show. I would think not, but forget the TNA stuff for a second. It's good for WWE to have Hogan back in the fold. I'm happy to see him back for WrestleMania 30 because they're doing this 30th anniversary celebration of WrestleMania, right? 30 years of Mania. How can you do 30 years of WrestleMania without Hulk Hogan? So they've got Hogan, they've got the Ultimate Warrior. Whatever you think of both of those guys, that's a big deal. Having Hogan and Warrior back for Mania is a big deal, especially since they don't have Rock this year. And I'll tell you what, you know, they did that segment backstage when Rock hosted back at 27. He had a little run-in in the back with Stone Cold Steve Austin. Austin was there that night to referee the Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler debacle, and they did a little face-to-face between them, and that was a cool throwback to the Attitude Era. Wouldn't shock me at all, and in fact, I would do it if I were them. I would do a similar segment with Hogan and Warrior. I would do a little backstage segment with the two of them. Or Rowdy Roddy Piper keeps making noise about being on the WrestleMania card. He keeps retweeting people saying that, oh, you should get Piper a match. I don't want to see Roddy Piper in a match. I like Roddy Piper a lot. I don't ever need to see him wrestle again. But his mouth, he can use his mouth at WrestleMania. I would not mind seeing a Piper's Pit segment. Maybe do Piper's Pit with Hogan, do Piper's Pit with Warrior, and have the other guy come out, maybe do a Piper's Pit segment with both of them, however you want to handle it. There's a lot of things that they can do if they want to. And having those two guys back is a big deal, especially if you're a longtime fan. You remember those early WrestleMania shows. You remember Hogan Warrior in the Sky Dome for WrestleMania 6. We know the two of them have had no love lost. Warrior has said some pretty nasty things about Hogan in the past. Hogan pretending like it doesn't matter, it's all water under the bridge. He said after Warrior got announced for the Hall of Fame, I'm happy to see it, he deserves it. You know, whether he actually believes that or not, who the hell knows? Warrior said some pretty vile stuff about him, about Hogan and his family, that I'm sure he did mean when he said it. Now everybody's got to be all nice. That's just how things go. I mean, the rumor is that Hogan's going to induct Warrior into the Hall of Fame, which would be comical for all of the reasons I just mentioned. But it's a big feather in their cap to have all these big names back when they're launching this network, which takes me to the WWE Network. This is the final sound-off I am recording pre-network launch. The network launches on Monday at 9 a.m. Eastern, so probably by the time many of you are listening to this, it will already be on the air. It has already been rolled out this weekend on Roku and PlayStation 3 and 4 devices, for those of you who aren't aware. It's available as a free download. You can't subscribe until Monday at 9 a.m. Eastern like everybody else. But just to give my personal experience, you know, I have a Roku, found the app, was able to put it on the Roku device, but then when I went to go kind of look at it on the television, it wasn't there. And then I realized that I have an older Roku device. Okay, I guess I have this Roku XDS or whatever. It's an older device, and it's only going to work on specific Roku models. And the models that it's going to work on are the LT, Roku 1, Roku 2, and Roku 3. That's important because if you remember that commercial that WWE aired on Raw a couple of weeks ago with the Bella Twins, the airplane ad, and they were talking about all the different devices and the ways that you can plug it in and hook it up, and this is how you get the network to work. They specifically mentioned in that ad that it would work on older Roku devices. That is not the case. I have not seen WWE comment on this, but that's the story from Roku directly. So I've had to go ahead and order one of these newer Roku devices, which is supposed to arrive by Monday. It's not the end of the world, whatever. If it doesn't, I can just watch the network on my phone, I guess. But that's kind of shitty. So that's the update on the different devices. Xbox, if you're an Xbox owner, it will be on there. The Xbox One, I guess, is not going to launch until this summer. Apple TV, I think it will be on Apple TV if you have one of those devices. The reason they're not really advertising that is because Apple gets a bigger cut than everybody else because they're fucking Apple. So they get something like 50% or something ridiculous like that. WWE would much rather people do not get it through Apple TV for that reason. So that's why you don't really see Apple TV mentioned whenever they say, oh, it's available for this device or that device. But it should be on there. Chromecast is another one some of you guys have asked me about. It should be on there. I know when they had the launch event in Vegas last month, when they gave out the press kits, there were Chromecast sticks that were in the press kits that they gave out. And there was also something related to Apple TV that they were handing out. And I doubt very seriously they would be handing those items out if they weren't going to have the network on those services. So pretty much all of the important devices are covered. The other thing they did this week, they put out the first official lineup for the new network. And the big news that I saw looking up and down this listing has to do with NXT. NXT, as many of you know, is coming to the network. It is leaving, I think it's leaving Hulu, coming over to the network officially full-time as of March 6th, which is a Thursday, 9 o'clock Eastern, which means that, at least for the first hour of Impact, NXT and Impact will go head-to-head. Now, if you ask me personally, I really don't think that that's going to have any impact, no pun intended, at all on TNA. If it does, very, very little. I doubt very seriously there's a lot of crossover between NXT and Impact. And the TNA fans, to their credit, are very loyal. No matter how low things get, they're always pretty much in that same 1.0 range, 1.1. I can't imagine NXT is going to affect it all that much. And also with the network, things are on demand. So after an episode of NXT airs, you can pretty much watch it right away after that whenever you want to. It's not like if you don't watch NXT at 9 o'clock, shit, I missed it. You can watch it anytime. So I don't think it's going to have that big of an effect, if any, on TNA. It's just kind of funny that they would program NXT up against Impact. They could put anything in that time slot. I know they have, you know, it's a 24-hour network, but they could have put anything there. They could have put classic stuff there. They could have put their countdown show there. No, they put NXT there, and I'm sure that was done on purpose. But here's the lineup here. This is from WWE.com. All of the shows that are listed for the network, obviously WrestleMania 30 will be on there. They're airing the entire Hall of Fame induction ceremony on April 5th. They're going to have pre- and post-game shows for Raw. So if you're one of these people that has to see everything, that's 4 hours of Raw every week now that you'll have to enjoy. Same thing for SmackDown pre- and post-game show. They got the WrestleMania Rewind show, the Monday Night War, Countdown, and the Monday Night War show is not listed here with a time, so I have no idea what day of the week that's going to air. All of these other shows that I'm mentioning have times attached to them. If you want to know what it is, I'm not going to go through the whole thing. Just go on the website and find out. Legends House premieres on April 10th at 8 p.m. That's also a Thursday. So that means that Legends House would segue right into NXT. They have another show called This Is NXT, which is going to be a backstage look at the brand, airing footage from the Performance Center. That sounds mildly interesting. The live NXT special, NXT Arrival, is this Thursday, February 27th at 8 p.m. Eastern. I believe it's a two-hour special, which means the last half will go head-to-head with Impact. Superstars, there's a show called Beyond the Ring, which has home video footage and classic matches from all the different promotions. They have a show called The Best of Raw every Wednesday at 9. Best of SmackDown, 1 o'clock on Saturdays. And then all the on-demand stuff with the pay-per-views. Every single pay-per-view available. They're claiming 1,500 hours initially of on-demand content. So I'll be ordering the network on Monday. I know a lot of the international listeners that we have are not going to have access to it for at least another year, which sucks. But for those guys, for the guys even here in this country who are not ordering it at all or who are not ordering it right away, they're going to take a wait-and-see approach. I'm sure I will have feedback and my thoughts on it on next week's show. the different programs, how it works, the good, the bad, the ugly, everything in between. So that'll be on episode 316 next week. Quick update on the TV rights situation. The exclusivity period with NBC Universal is over. They did not reach a deal, which means WWE is now technically a free agent. They're on the open market. They can negotiate with other networks and conglomerates and whoever they want to, whether it's Spike, Fox, or whoever. NBC does have the right to match any offer that is made to WWE. This is where things get a little tricky, though, because if Vince McMahon thinks his brand is worth more than it really is, he's going to be in a lot of trouble if he goes out there, as they are right now, and they find that nobody else is willing to pay what they want for their programming. And they may have to just crawl back to NBC and settle for the same deal they had before, maybe even a worse deal. And that's going to look really, really bad for WWE, and I'm sure that's going to send the stock price plummeting if that happens. So if you have WWE stock, you're probably pretty happy. The stock is up a lot over the last year. And I had one person tweet me and say, well, what should I do? Should I keep it? Should I dump it? I don't like telling people what to do. I don't like telling people to order a pay-per-view or not order a pay-per-view, let alone to tell them how they should handle their money and their stock investments, because that's certainly not my trade. My thought on it is this. You know, the stock has been going up, up, up. I don't know how much you've invested in it if you are one of those people. If you've made a killing off of it, I'd get the hell out right now. Because how much higher is it really going to go? Unless they are able to get triple what they make now from NBC or from another broadcast partner, and that may send the stock up even more. I don't know how much higher it can really go. I think it can only go down from here. The network's going to launch. You don't know if there's going to be problems related to that. You don't know how the TV rights thing is going to work out. I think there's more to lose than gain when it comes to that. You know, because maybe they go back to NBC and they make double. And even that looks like it may be a stretch at this point. How much higher is that stock really going to go? I'd probably pull out, but that's just me. You do what you want to do. That leads into the Dish situation. It's another controversy related to this whole network mess. Dish Network, not happy that WWE is undercutting them, launching their own network and charging less for pay-per-views. You knew that was going to ruffle a whole lot of feathers. Dish took Elimination Chamber off the docket. They are not airing the pay-per-view this weekend. It's funny, not only are they not airing Elimination Chamber, but when people go on the wrestling page on the Dish website, and some people are reporting that even when they call Dish asking about Elimination Chamber, they're being redirected or recommended instead to order the TNA Lockdown pay-per-view on March 9th. So talk about rubbing salt in the wound. So if you're a Dish customer, you're not going to be able to get the Elimination Chamber this weekend. DirecTV was also not very happy. I think they're airing the pay-per-view, but I think when the Chamber show is over this weekend, you're going to start to see some other dominoes fall. There's other reports that I'm seeing online. I don't think they're confirmed yet, that Comcast, which has something like over 20 million cable subscribers across the country, may not be carrying WWE pay-per-views after Elimination Chamber. So Comcast may pull out. You're going to start to see more of that because a lot of these people are very upset with WWE. You know, they feel like they're being taken advantage of, that WWE wants all the money to themselves, which they do, and I don't blame them. But I could also see the position of a lot of these companies. So for this weekend, at least, if you're a Dish customer, you're out of luck. Let's talk about the Elimination Chamber here because that is the big pay-per-view this weekend in Minneapolis. Let's go through the card here from bottom and we'll work our way up to the top. I'll get predictions along the way. The kickoff match before the pay-per-view at 7:30 Eastern, Cody Rhodes and Goldust against Curtis Axel and Ryback. You know, Goldust, I don't know if it was in an interview or on Twitter, but he responded to all of these reports recently that, or questions from fans that, are you going to wrestle your brother at WrestleMania? And Goldust is emphatic that he is not. It's something he wanted. He says the time has passed. Too much time has gone by. It's not happening. And his response, it sounded like he was kind of bothered by it, that he was upset, like he would want to do it, but they just waited too long, and now it looks like it's not going to happen. I don't know if that's just him trying to swerve everybody or if he's being honest, but my impression is that they're not going to do it. And I'm okay with that because Cody and Goldust have turned out to be a hell of a team. Many months ago, I proposed an idea on the Sound Off about how I would go about building to a feud like that. They've done nothing. They have done nothing. And that doesn't mean that after the Chamber, they can't take the next 6-7 weeks to really build up a good match between Cody and Goldust. I just think they missed the boat by not starting in that direction at least a month earlier. That's what I would have done. So they're already kind of late into the game if they want to do it. They're such a good team. I don't know what you do with either one of them if you break them up. I feel like Goldust, as a singles? I mean, what are you going to do with him? You know, they'll probably end up just using him as an enhancement talent to put over younger guys. Maybe that's the best role for him. I just feel like I watch him in the ring and the way he moves around and everything. He's got a lot of juice left in him. It's not like a lot of other 40-something-year-old wrestlers that you see. The guy can go. Him and Cody make a good team. They already broke up the primetime players. The Shield looks like they may be broken up soon. So all of these tag teams we had just a few months ago, all of a sudden we don't have as many tag teams as we had before. So breaking up Cody and Goldust right now, maybe not the best move in the world. I'd probably just go ahead and keep them together, put them in some sort of fatal four-way match at WrestleMania, them and three other teams with the tag team belts at WrestleMania. If they're keeping them together and they're not breaking them up, I see no reason for them to lose this match. So Cody and Goldust is my pick for that one. Then on the pay-per-view, we have Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. This is an actual pay-per-view match this Sunday. I'm going to go with Titus since he's the one I'm sure they have plans for. I don't think they have any plans at all for Darren Young. Darren Young is good. I just don't see them doing anything with him going forward. He'll be around, but Titus is the one they've got plans for, obviously. So he should be the one to go over. I'm going to go with Titus O'Neil. We have the New Age Outlaws defending the tag team titles against the Usos. Now, I've said many times before that I have no problem with the Outlaws having the belts, provided that in the end they end up putting over a team like the Usos. If the idea was to get the belts off Cody and Goldust, put them on heels, give the Outlaws one last token run, and then get those belts off pretty quickly within a couple of months onto a younger team, fine. No problem. They get the nostalgia run, and in the end, the right team goes over. I'm going to go ahead and say the New Age Outlaws win this match, and that's probably how I would do it. And the reason I say that is, I think, well, two reasons. Let me just say this first. The Usos got singles wins over both Billy Gunn and Road Dogg on TV this week. Now, that's not a guarantee that the Outlaws are going to win that match, but in WWE, the way they do things ordinarily, probably a sign that the Outlaws are going to win the actual tag match, being that they lost the two singles matches. So that's number one. Number two, I would go ahead and save that big tag team title win for the Usos for WrestleMania. I just think it'll mean more. It'll be more memorable on that show. It'll probably mean more to them. It'll be a cool moment in front of a bigger crowd. So if the Outlaws win this match on a fluke win, they do something, they cheat, whatever, or maybe even like a no decision, and they could drag it out a little bit longer, and if Cody and Goldust don't break up, they want their shot at the tag team belts. Maybe you get the Wyatts involved, you know, Harper and Rowan, or some other team, and that's how you get to the four-way. Do an elimination match at WrestleMania, and give a big win to the Usos. Let them go over and get their big moment in the sun at WrestleMania. That's how I would do it. So I'm okay with giving the Outlaws a win here if in the end they drop the belts to the Usos at WrestleMania. So I'm going to go ahead and say the Outlaws win this match. I think they will anyway, but that's probably, I would do it the same way. So I'm going to go with the Outlaws. Intercontinental title on the line, Big E defending against Jack Swagger. This is an interesting match. Big E is the one who's been getting the big push lately. Swagger, not so much. Cesaro, where does Antonio Cesaro fit into this whole equation? He's in the Elimination Chamber match. I don't know anybody who thinks he's actually going to win or that he's going to be anywhere even close to being in the world title picture when this pay-per-view is over. He's going to go back down a few notches. But you want him to do something meaningful. So I'm thinking to myself, well, what can we do with Cesaro at WrestleMania? Well, I've said before, maybe you do Cesaro and Sheamus. Sheamus is kind of the odd guy out. It sounded like they were going to be doing Bryan and Sheamus at WrestleMania. I hope to God that's no longer the plan. Bryan, put Bryan in a match with Triple H, put him in the title match, anything but a mid-card match with Sheamus. So if Bryan is out of the picture, Sheamus is left out in the cold. What do you do with him? Sheamus and Cesaro, you know, two big guys beating each other up, fine by me. I think they could probably go in there and have a pretty good brawl. And I've also said that I would do a double turn with Cesaro and Sheamus, maybe not even at WrestleMania. Maybe they have a couple of matches on pay-per-view. Maybe the second match you do the turn. Or maybe at WrestleMania you do it. Because Cesaro, the future for Cesaro is as a babyface. The people are already cheering for him. Sheamus has got a lot of fan support since he came back. I don't know how long that's going to last. I really don't. If they don't put him in something meaningful, I don't think it's going to last very long. That's the whole reason why people were booing him last time, because they got tired of seeing him and he wasn't doing anything. He had no meaningful role on the show. So turning Sheamus and turning Cesaro and doing it in a match with them going one-on-one, I like that idea. I'm perfectly content if that would be the plan for them at WrestleMania. But if not, What do you do with Cesaro? Who else is there for him to go up against? Well, what about Big E for the Intercontinental title? Big E is my pick for this match. I think he's going to hold on to the belt. I think he's still getting the push. I don't see Swagger, you know, getting a big win over him because they're not doing anything with Swagger. And then you do Cesaro and Big E at WrestleMania for the Intercontinental Championship. Now, you can also have Swagger win the belt and then put the Real Americans against each other, do a split, and have Cesaro and Swagger. But then what do you do with Big E? I cannot see Jack Swagger having a WrestleMania match and not Big E. He's the one getting a push. I say he retains, probably a better chance of him and Cesaro than Swagger and Cesaro. Batista and Alberto Del Rio. I think this one is fairly obvious. Batista is just killing time until the main event of WrestleMania. Batista goes over. And let me just say this about Batista. He had one segment on Raw backstage with Del Rio this past Monday. Del Rio showed up wearing a neck brace after Batista powerbombed him through the announce desk the week before. And he, you know, he called him a perro. He said, I'm going to break both your arms or wrestle at the Elimination Chamber, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? Nobody cares. Nobody cares about this match. Nobody cares about Del Rio. And very few people care about Batista right now. Not going to say nobody does, but the way he's been booked, boy, has he been on the back burner or what? This is the guy that they built up. He's coming back. 4 years he's been away. He wins the Royal Rumble. He's getting a championship match at WrestleMania. And nobody cares. Nobody cares that Big Dave Batista is back. And the reason is, there's so many other things going on right now. I think it's just, he's a victim of bad timing. You have this, you know, these fans that are getting more and more vocal every single week. Now they're chanting for Punk. Nobody knows what's going on with him. Daniel Bryan is over like gangbusters. He's the darling of the fans right now. And don't just say he's the darling of the internet, because I'll punch you in the face if you say that. He's the darling of the fans, okay? He's gone well past the internet crowd, and people love the guy. And they want to see him, and he's probably the number one babyface in the company right now, in terms of fan support and cheers and all that kind of stuff. So you've got this movement going on. They call it the Yes Movement. Call it whatever the hell you want. You got that going on. Now they're bringing Hogan back. Undertaker's going to be back soon. They're going to be building up his feud and the streak for WrestleMania. The network is launching. All of these different things are going on at the same time. And Batista is just kind of lost in the shuffle. It's almost like he didn't have to come back right now. I feel like if business was just kind of like, ugh, you know, it was dead, it was stagnant, there was nothing going on, nobody was hot, nobody was getting over, then Batista comes back, big main event star, multiple-time world champion, he's been gone long enough, it probably would have meant more, people would probably be more excited about it. There's no reason to get overly excited about Batista being back. It's nice to have him, you know, I like the guy, but does he really have to be headlining WrestleMania? You've got a lot of things going on right now, you've got a lot of younger guys, you've got guys who are over, who probably should be in that spot, and Batista is kind of third, fourth, fifth down on that list. Not his fault, but I think that probably has a lot to do with why people just aren't that excited about him. That and the way they booked him, because Del Rio was booked like shit, so you put Batista with a guy who's been booked like a joke, why should we care? I saw the Batista bomb through the announce table a couple of weeks ago. What the hell do I need to see the match for? Anyway, Batista wins. Then comes the real main event of this show. Not to take away from the Chamber. I am looking forward to the Chamber, but I am looking forward more to the Wyatt family and the Shield. This, to me, is the real main event of the pay-per-view this weekend. I love the way that they have built this up from the very first confrontation they had late last year to what they've done over the last 2, maybe 3 weeks with these two groups. 2 weeks ago, especially when they had that standoff, and then the standoff they had on Raw this past Monday, and I'll get more into that in the Raw review. Just awesome, awesome stuff. I love the fact that they're doing it with guys who are new, who are fresh, guys that you can build around. I think Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt, I don't want to call them the Austin Rock or the Cena Orton or Hogan Warrior. I don't want to attach a label like that to them. Call them whatever you want. I just think for this next era coming up that we have these next 5, 10 years, those are going to be the two guys that lead that next crop. They're going to be the top, whatever they are, baby faces, heels, whatever they are. I think Reigns and Bray Wyatt are going to be those guys. And they're already really, really good. And they have a good supporting cast. Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins don't need to be a supporting cast. They are right now, because Reigns has been positioned as the leader of the pack. Ambrose, I think, can do very well on his own as a top heel down the road. Rollins probably is a babyface. But I just love the way they built this up. You know, the dissension between Reigns and Ambrose and Rollins trying to be peacemaker. And you got that going on. You've got the feud between the two factions going on at the same time. Reigns establishing himself more as the alpha male of the group. And destroying Mark Henry the way he did on Raw last Monday. Ambrose kind of being jealous of that whole thing. So you have that story going on concurrently with whatever the hell that they're doing with the Wyatts and the Shield. That's why I think the Wyatts are going over here. Wyatt family is my pick. Something will happen in this match, probably between Reigns and Ambrose. I don't know what. I can't predict exactly what the finish is going to be. I can only predict that if Bray Wyatt is going one-on-one with John Cena at WrestleMania, shouldn't be losing this match. So my pick is the Wyatt family, and the only thing I'm sad about is that we can't drag this out longer. I really do wish there was a way that they could find to drag this out until WrestleMania, build to a rematch, maybe some kind of gimmick tag team match or something like that. You can still do the split with the Shield where, you know, Ambrose and Rollins cut loose, they cut bait on Reigns, they attack him, however they're going to handle it. You could still do that at WrestleMania, or you could still do it on Raw the night after. I just think to get more mileage out of this, because it's such a hot feud, it's clicking. People are reacting to it. These guys, until the end of Raw Monday night, didn't even touch. They came face-to-face, and the people were going crazy. They had them in the palm of their hand. You'll notice, if you go back and watch those Shield Wyatt segments, you don't hear a Daniel Bryan chant. You don't hear a CM Punk chant, or a JBL chant, or a Jerry Lawler chant, or anything like that. It's because they're actually focused on what the hell's going on in the ring. They care. It's exciting. I'd like to see more of that. So I hate the idea that it's going to just get blown off this weekend, but if it is, I've enjoyed the build. Wyatts are going to go over. They're my pick. And that leads into the main event, the Elimination Chamber match for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. Randy Orton defends against John Cena, Daniel Bryan, Sheamus, Christian, and Cesaro. Barring Brock Lesnar as a late addition, it doesn't sound like he'll be there. He'll be on Raw Monday. It doesn't look like he'll be at the pay-per-view, so I think Christian is probably safe. Although I would watch my back. If I were Christian, I would walk backwards to the ring just to make absolutely sure nobody knocks me out and takes my spot in the pod. So barring a late addition of Brock or somebody else, I'm going to go with Randy Orton. I think Orton's coming out of this with the championship. I think he's retaining. They've been really promoting the idea that Orton has been in like 5 or 6 Elimination Chamber matches to date. He's 0-for-5, or I think it's 0-for-5. Has not won an Elimination Chamber match ever in his career. They've pointed that out numerous times. I think there's a reason for that. I think the only people who even have a remote chance of even walking out with the championship are Orton, Cena, and Bryan. I don't think any of the other three realistically have a snowball's chance in hell. So between Orton, Cena, and Bryan, okay, there's no reason to put the belt back on Cena right now. And if Cena's going to go one-on-one with Bray Wyatt, he's already taken. You know, he's already busy for WrestleMania. So that leaves Bryan and Orton. And as much as I would love to see Bryan get his big moment, and they can really build a lot of drama, I wouldn't even have it come down to Bryan and Orton. I'd probably have it come down to Cena and Bryan as the final two in a perfect world, and give Bryan this big win in the chamber, and he wins the title, and he goes on to defend against Orton and Batista at WrestleMania, because Orton's going to be entitled to his rematch, and you can turn it into a triple threat. That's probably the way I would go with it at this point, but I just don't see them doing it. I think Triple H, he needs his WrestleMania match, and if Punk's not coming back, and Punk could come back, but if he's not, there's no apparent match for Triple H at WrestleMania, unless you put him in there with Roman Reigns or somebody like that. If they're going to build to the Roman Reigns split earlier and have him go rogue, and then build to a match with him and Triple H, that's just fantasy booking. I don't see it happening. The only logical opponent for Triple H is Daniel Bryan. So having said that, I think Orton's going over here. Very curious to see how the crowd in Minneapolis reacts to that when it happens. And how they handle things with Bryan, because on television this past week, they injured his arm. So I guess the gimmick going into this match is that Bryan is hurt. He's got a bum arm. Do they do an injury angle with him at the pay-per-view? Do they have the authority? Do they have the balls to actually remove him from the match just before the bell rings? I don't think that that would be a wise move. But clearly it's going to play some kind of role in this match at the pay-per-view, or else they wouldn't, I don't think they would have done that on TV. So that'll be something to watch for. But those are my predictions for the pay-per-view. Orton, Wyatt Family, Batista, Big E, Outlaws, Titus, and Cody and Goldust. And that takes us into Monday Night Raw this past week, which was live from Denver, Colorado, the site where Vince McMahon once famously called Stan Kroenke an Enos on live television, the good old days. The good, the bad, and the ugly, John Cena and Cesaro. Got to talk about this. This was an excellent match. Probably the best match in WWE all year. It's right up there with the Daniel Bryan Bray Wyatt match from the Royal Rumble. A lot of impressive stuff during this match. Power moves by both guys. Antonio Cesaro. Oh, I keep calling him Antonio. Cesaro. I have to get used to that. The uppercuts. Uppercutting the shit out of John Cena in this match. At one point, he uppercutted him right off the ropes, out to the floor. He did the deal where coming off the... I don't know if he was coming off the ropes or if he did it from a standing position, but he propelled Cena up into the air and knocked his block off with an uppercut on the way down. There was another spot here where he actually countered out of the attitude adjustment. We've seen some people do that before, and usually there's a little hiccup in there. They don't quite land on their feet. Cesaro landed on his feet, hit the ropes, came off with a big boot to the face. There were a lot of really cool moves in this match. John Cena won with the AA. You know, it is what it is. I'm not going to let it bother me. You know, Cesaro got a big win over Randy Orton, the WWE champion, clean as a sheet on SmackDown the week before. So anybody in that position was going to lose to John Cena. But he gained more than he lost. And there are people who will say, well, you know, you said the same thing about Damian Sandow, and look at him now. And that's true. I think I did say the same thing about Damian Sandow when he had the cash in on Raw last year. He cashed in. He had a really, really good match against John Cena. He was aggressive. He was competitive. He was in there, had a lot of near falls. It was a very impressive match. And there were people, myself included, who thought, okay, this is a breakout performance for Damian Sandow. I don't even remember the last time he was on Raw. So the people who were saying that, you're right. I have no counter to that argument. You're absolutely right. Cesaro could turn out to be the next Damian Sandow. Vince McMahon, these people like play toys. You know, he plays with his toys. After a while, he gets bored. He throws them away. Maybe Cesaro turns out to be one of those guys. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think that's going to happen here. I really don't. I think he came out of this match. He opened a lot of eyes. He looked really good. I get the impression when I hear interviews that a lot of the wrestlers like him. They like working with him. They're impressed by him. They're impressed by his strength. And that's the kind of guy that you want to build around. Even if Cesaro isn't the top guy, Cesaro should be one of the top five or six guys in that company. Even right now. I'm not even talking a year from now. Right now, Cesaro can be one of the top five guys in that company. So I think this was a really good match for him in a lot of different ways. I think, you know, the fact that it took Vince McMahon, I saw the reports online that Vince McMahon was really impressed, and when they came through the curtain, he told people that, you know, wow, you know, you really had a breakout performance there, and now Vince understands the kind of star that he has on his hands. Let me tell you something. If Vince McMahon has had this guy under contract for, what, 2 years now, I think he's been with the company? If it took him this long to realize what he had with Cesaro, he's an idiot. And Vince is a smart guy, okay? He's been in business a long time. He's a multimillionaire. I guess on paper right now, he's probably a billionaire with the stock being up. Smart guy. He's an idiot. Daniel Bryan beat Christian. Very good opening match in the first hour of Raw Monday night. Immediately followed by an impromptu match against Kane. That's where Kane destroyed Bryan's arm. So Bryan was in the ring for most of hour one on Raw Monday night. And hour one actually did really well. It was the highest rated hour of the show. So that's a good sign for him. Bryan also finally has some new merchandise. I am digging his new shirt. It's got an illustration of his face on there with the word yes underneath it. Reminds me a lot of Maddox, and I don't mean Brad. I'm talking about the best page in the universe. Some of you will get that reference, hopefully. Speaking of Maddox, though, let me talk about Brad Maddox. I've gotten a lot of questions about this, asking me, where is Brad Maddox? I don't have a good answer for you. Now, I don't watch SmackDown every week. I will watch SmackDown when I know that something good was on the show or if I'm flipping. Last night, I actually was. I was flipping because I had been watching DDP on Shark Tank. And so I'm flipping around, and I realized that SmackDown was on, and I saw the last half of Sheamus and Christian, who had a good match. And on occasion, I'll watch SmackDown when I know something good is going to be on there. I knew that Cesaro had a really good match with Orton a couple of weeks ago, so I watched it. When there's a really good Shield match, I'll watch. But I don't watch the show every week, okay? I have enough. My wrestling limit I have reached. I have way too much wrestling on the agenda every week to watch. And just don't have the time to watch the show every week. Maybe Maddox is on SmackDown. I don't give a shit, even if he is, because Brad Maddox is the Raw General Manager. So if he is on SmackDown, and I don't even know if he is, I'm just saying, if he is, if that's the answer, oh, well, you don't watch SmackDown, he's on that show, he shouldn't be on SmackDown if he's the Raw GM. What the fuck is he doing on SmackDown? He should be on Raw. You know, this just goes to what I've said. I said this time and time and time again, and I will keep saying it until something changes. What is the point of even having a general manager on either of these shows? You have Triple H and Stephanie, who supersede every general manager's decision anyway, because they're higher up on the totem pole. What they say goes, right? They're called the fucking authority, for crying out loud. What do you need other authority figures for? This group calls themselves the authority. That sounds pretty definitive to me. I don't even know why you need a GM. Hogan's coming back. There's rumors that Hogan may be the GM, or if Sting signs. I don't know what the hell's going on with Sting. I have no update on that. If he signs, maybe he'll be the Raw GM. And that probably would be the best role for those guys, because I don't need to see them wrestling every week. But what the fuck is the point? Why do we even need a Raw General Manager anymore? I ask somebody, please, write in to me and explain to me why that's even necessary. And Kane is the director of operations. He's making matches when Triple H and Stephanie are not on the show. So what do we need a GM for? Please, somebody, please. Oh, my God. Oh, anyway. Sure looks like Christian's a heel, based off his match with Bryan on Monday, the way SmackDown went off the air Friday. Lost to Sheamus. Sheamus is posing on the turnbuckles as the show is fading out. And all of a sudden, Christian just shoves him off the top rope. I hope it is an actual turn, because heel Christian's a lot more entertaining to me. He's a lot like Chris Sabin in TNA in that respect. Both really good baby faces, but much better as whiny heels. At least I think so. Roman Reigns beat Mark Henry clean with a Superman punch and a spear. Less than 5 minutes, if even that. Lots of Roman Reigns chants during the match. Rollins was ecstatic. Ambrose, not so much, because it took him a while to wrestle Mark Henry the week before, and even then, he couldn't get the job done, so he was very very much jealous, I think, of Roman Reigns here. He put the boots to Henry when the match was over, just kind of adding insult to injury. All of a sudden, lights go out, Wyatts appear on the big screen. Luke Harper asks them if they're willing to die for their cause. Wyatt then chimes in, says, you know, because if you're not, you've already lost. And Roman Reigns says, well, why don't you come out here and talk that noise? And Bray Wyatt says, funny, you know, we were thinking the exact same thing. I thought this whole exchange here, whoever wrote this or whoever put this together is a genius. This was so well done. Then, you know, Rowan in his sheet mask looks in the camera, says, run. They come out. They have another standoff. Like I said earlier, to me, this is the real main event of Elimination Chamber this Sunday. This is the match I'm looking forward to the most. They had them finally brawl at the end of the show, but it was brief. They went off the air with it, so it was fine. They didn't give too much away. Just great, great stuff. Bad News Barrett. I have Bad News Barrett written down here. I have to talk about this. He had a very brief segment backstage with Cody and Goldust. Cody and Goldust were used on this show to pimp out some toys. That was their purpose on this show. And out of nowhere, Bad News Barrett comes into the camera view, knocks over a bunch of toys, and walks away. And that was the whole purpose of the segment, just a complete waste. And I see people entertained it. Oh, I think it's funny. Oh, it was like, it's a great segment, Solomonster. What are you talking about? Yeah, okay, fine. Not a fan. I'm still waiting for the guy to tell somebody, you know, I've got some bad news for you, and actually punch somebody in the face. Now, maybe that's just me. But anyway, I have to give the devil his due. Reason I bring this up, Barrett had a segment on Main Event this week, and they were in Denver, of course. Colorado is one of the states that recently legalized marijuana. And I'll play the audio here of maybe the best line I've ever heard Bad News Barrett deliver on TV. Here it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I have some decorum, please? The
The good news is that for the first time in my entire career, I am not the only person in the arena who's incredibly high.
Okay, that was a good line. I have to say, that was a good line, and if we can get more Bad News Barrett like that on Raw, I might actually warm up to the gimmick. Got to get that stuff on the main shows, but that was good. And the main event of Raw Monday was Randy Orton and Sheamus. There was no crowd hijacking. They actually had a decent match before the Shield ran in for the DQ. They do, after all, still work for the Authority, although I'm sure Reigns, at least Reigns won't be for much longer. That's when the Wyatts ran out for the big brawl. Cena ran out. Bryan ran out. Cesaro. Just one big schmoz to end the show on Monday. And that was Raw. Photo of The Undertaker surfaced online this week, looking very much like James Hetfield from Metallica. Or as somebody on Twitter pointed out, he looks like Mike from Breaking Bad in the photo that is out there. It's Undertaker at someone's house. I don't know if it's his house or somebody else's house. And I don't even know how recent the photo was. This could have been from a while back. It's got to be somewhat recent. I mean, if it wasn't from the last few weeks, it had to be from the last few months. It's him and another dude, and Undertaker is standing there. He's got a hat on. He's got a white goatee. He may not even have the white goatee when he shows up on Raw this Monday, or maybe he will. You know, he's reinvented his look a whole bunch of times over the years. Remember, he's gone from Gray Glove Undertaker to Purple Glove Undertaker to Batman Undertaker. We had Teardrop Undertaker for a while there, Ministry Undertaker, American Badass Undertaker, Big Evil Undertaker. It's a kind of a hybrid Dead Man Big Evil version of the Undertaker, to Mohawk Undertaker, to now possibly Breaking Bad Undertaker, who sells meth. There's a gimmick idea for you. So we've got Hogan, we've got the likely return of the Undertaker on Raw this Monday, and we've got Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman all expected back on the show this week. So it should be a fun show. A smaller crowd than usual. They're already sold out in Green Bay, but the building they're running only fits about 7,000 people. I think for Raw a couple weeks ago, they had like 16 or 17,000. Hopefully it's a loud 7,000, and that will be the show that segues right into live programming on the network at 11:05. So it should be a fun night. NXT this week was mostly hype for the live special, the Arrival special, February 27th. We had the Ascension beating two guys whose names I didn't get with the Fall of Man finish, not much to it. I have no idea if the Ascension are going to be on the special. They are the tag team champions. I would think they would fit them in there. We had Mrs. Cody Rhodes as our ring announcer again this week. She announces that Tyler Breeze has entered the building. That means he's wrestling this week, which is great. Emma beats Summer Rae with the Emma Lock in a match that went almost 7 minutes long. You know, you think these women would get 7 minutes on Raw? That would be my question. Yeah, me neither. 3 hours, I guess, just isn't enough time for that. But this was good. And you know, with these women kind of feuding on Raw right now, I hope they get the chance to have a match like this on that show at some point, even if it's not quite as long. It was Emma who tried for her move. She tried for the Dilemma at one point, which is basically Tajiri's old tarantula move on the ropes, and Summer countered it, basically gave Emma a knee to the head. She took over from there, kind of abused the poor girl. Emma fought back, and like I said, in the end, she won with her move, which looks really good. If they let her wrestle, I think she'll impress a lot of people. And Summer Rae, I like Summer Rae a lot. I think Summer Rae, as a heel, she's found her calling. She's so perfect in that role, and she gets a little bit better and a little bit better every week. So this was good stuff. Best thing of the show, though, came next. It was Antonio Cesaro, Sami Zayn, and Renee Young in a sit-down. Renee Young had a sit-down with the two of them backstage, so there was no crowd involvement. This was, you know, think back to the sit-down that JR had in the locker room with Austin and Rock before WrestleMania 17. This wasn't quite on that level, but it was kind of the same thing. And it was great. You know, you had the theme of this was that every time Sami Zayn would try to speak, Cesaro would cut him off. Cesaro was like not even paying attention to him. He was looking at Renee. He would chime in every now and then with these answers about how great he was. And, you know, after a while, that got on Sami Zayn's nerves. Renee went away because she could see things were about to get bad. And they went nose to nose. And they couldn't touch because if they did, they wouldn't get the match. There would be consequences. So that's how they justified there was no big pull-apart brawl here. But Sami Zayn, you know, he made it very clear that he's going to beat Antonio Cesaro when they have their big rematch at the live special on the 27th. And, Cesaro was talking about, you know, I am in the Elimination Chamber match. I could walk out with the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. He could. I could also hit the lottery one day. I don't think that's going to happen either, but sure, he could. But you just have to watch the segment. There isn't really much to recap here. It was just really well done the way they did this. Zayn walked off in the end. Cesaro was kind of left speechless. Couldn't believe what he just heard. He felt disrespected. These guys are going to steal the show. I really can't wait to see what they've got up their sleeve. They had that great 2 out of 3 falls match last year. It's hard to top something like that. You know, when you have this match, everyone's chanting match of the year, and it kind of takes on a life of its own. I wouldn't call it the match of the year, but it was way up there. How do you top something like that? They have no stipulation as of yet. I thought it was going to be another 2 out of 3 falls match. They haven't said that, though, so right now it's just a straight singles match, and very much looking forward to that. When we had Adrian Neville and Tyler Breeze one-on-one in the main event, I really enjoy their matches together. They've had a few recently. Much, much more than I do Adrian Neville and Corey Graves in the ring. They're just like oil and water. They don't go well together. Their matches are boring. I don't like it at all. But when Neville's in there with Breeze, I don't know what it is. It's not like Breeze is so much better than Corey Graves. It's just they have a better chemistry together. I guess maybe that's the right word for it. There was a great spot in this match where Neville did a pair of standing backflips. You know, he's showing off some of his fancy moves for the crowd. And when he lands on his feet after the last one, Breeze just drop kicks him right in the face. Right in the mush. So that was great. It was pretty competitive most of the way. I like that that's the direction they're going in now with Tyler Breeze. He's not just a comedy guy. He actually can wrestle. He has a mean streak in him. He can have a competitive match against the guy who's wrestling for the championship in a week. I really liked the match, and in the end, Neville won with the Red Arrow, as he should, since he is the one challenging for the NXT Championship. Bo Dallas came out after the match was over to confront Neville. They exchanged some words. Bo Dallas was teasing like he was going to fight, started rolling up his sleeves, and then decided better of it, and he bailed. So that was NXT. It seems not a lot went on, but it was actually a very good show, better than some of the recent shows they've had. And this all builds to the live special this Thursday, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. I imagine there will be one more Hulu show this upcoming Wednesday. I think there's one more show before the live special, but I don't know that for sure. The live special, I believe, is 2 hours long. It's also going to have a pre-show on the WWE Network at 7:30, if you want to tune into that sort of thing. Bret Hart, Kevin Nash, and Paul Heyman are the guests on the pre-show. They'll be the analysts. They only have 3 matches announced for the special. They're going to have cameos planned for John Cena. Ugh, as if we need him on the show. A few other guys are going to be there as well. For a lot of subscribers to the network, this will be their first exposure to NXT. So I would think they might want to add another 2 or 3 matches. If they go 2 hours, they could definitely fit more matches in there. Do some promos to introduce some of these guys to people for the first time. Here are my predictions. We're going to do some predictions here for the NXT special. I figure Emma wins the women's title from Paige. I don't know what's been up with Paige. Paige has been hurt, I guess. She's been recovering from an injury. But they haven't done anything with her on any of these shows. No promos, no appearances. They mention her. She's the champion, but that's it. So I don't know what the injury is or what the injury was. I don't know how much she can do, if it's going to limit what she can do in this match with Emma. I figure Emma's going over. She'll win the title. Maybe Emma will go heel. I've said before, you know, Paul Heyman's going to be in the house, and we need a Heyman girl. Just saying. Then we have Antonio Cesaro and Sami Zayn. I think Zayn gets his big win over Cesaro here, so he's my pick. And Adrian Neville and Bo Dallas in a ladder match for the NXT Championship. I think Bo Dallas's reign comes to an end. I think Adrian Neville goes over. He wins the championship. I think he'll try to pull the Red Arrow off the ladder. He's a maniac if he tries it, but I don't see how he can't. I think he's definitely going to try it. Hopefully the referee is standing there kind of holding the ladder so the guy doesn't fall and kill himself. And I think we're going to get at least one, maybe even 2 new debuts on this show. Leo Kruger's been repackaged recently as Adam Rose, so maybe we see him there. Then there's Solomon Crowe, the former Sami Callihan, with his evil hacker gimmick that he's still doing. That might be a good place to debut him. I'd be very surprised if we don't see at least one new face pop up on the show at some point. maybe even at the end, to establish a new contender for Neville's title if he wins the championship, of course. So those are my predictions for the NXT special this Thursday. If you've never seen NXT before, you don't need to know all the backstories. It's a fun show. It's good action. They've got some good characters. Maybe they'll get, you know, Colin Cassidy and Enzo Amore somewhere in there on the show. So if you're going to be subscribing to the network, you have no excuse not to check out NXT. I've been reviewing it and yakking about it on my podcast for about 9 months. I think it's been about 9 months since I started watching the show week to week. And it's just a very enjoyable hour of wrestling, and I give it my full recommendation. If you've never checked it out, this is the week to do so. We're going to take a quick break here to talk about our sponsor and then segue into the Impact review. Before we do that, just to go back to the Ring of Honor news, I said they were making the formal announcement this afternoon as part of their Q&A at their HonorCon event. They have made the announcement. It is official. They are working with New Japan Pro Wrestling. They're bringing over some talent from New Japan over to the States to wrestle on their Toronto show May 10th and in New York City at the Hammerstein Ballroom on May 17th. If you are a Ring of Honor fan, if you are a New Japan fan, or if you are just a wrestling fan and you can make it to either of those shows, I would highly advise that you do so. That is going to be something special. I'll be at the New York show on the 17th. Apparently Tanahashi will be there, Okada, a few other guys. I don't have the list of people in front of me, but the key guys from New Japan, it looks like, are coming in. I don't know what they're doing, but that's going to be special. So that's the formal announcement from Ring of Honor. I just wanted to mention that here since I said I would break in with the news, and now it is official. So let's take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll talk about Impact right after this. Check this out, guys. For you, the listeners of The Sound Off, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial so that you can check out their service, and it's a quality service. I wouldn't be mentioning it on my show if it wasn't. They have a bunch of wrestling books to choose from in audio form, including Lex Luger's book, Dusty Rhodes' book, Hulk Hogan's book is available with narration from the Hulkster himself. There's even one that chronicles the rise of the late Junkyard Dog in Mid-South, which sounds really interesting. You can choose any one of those free by trying audible.com. If you commute to work, or if you like listening to things other than music at the gym, I know a lot of people listen to this podcast that way. It seems to me an audiobook would absolutely make sense. To get one, make sure you go to audibletrial.com/solomonster. It's another way to show your support for The Sound Off, and you get something free in return. Can't beat that. Again, that's audibletrial.com/solomonster. Time for the Impact Report. Another good show this week, I thought. Classy move on TNA's part, having a tribute graphic up for Viscera at the start of the show. I think he worked in TNA very briefly many, many years ago. I could be wrong. But, you know, whether he did or he didn't, I mean, he had a cup of coffee there. I don't know that most people even remember it, but they didn't have to do that. They did it. I thought that was just a classy move on their part. The videos that they had on this show building up Gunner throughout the program for his title match with Magnus were terrific. These were great. Did more to make me care about this guy than anything TNA has ever done before. He had that in-ring promo a few weeks ago. He did that with James Storm. It might have even been last month at this point. They were on the European tour, so it had to be within the last few weeks. That was the first time I really took notice of the guy. He cut a really good promo in the ring on that episode of Impact, and I kind of sat up and I said, oh, wow, you know, this is the first time I've seen anything from Gunner that I would consider to be great. And these videos took it to the next level, made it more personal. They had old photos of him in school looking totally different than he does now. And he's not an old guy. I think he's 31 years old. You look at these pictures of him in college and high school, looks like a totally different person. He had comments from his mother, his father, talked about him growing up being a huge wrestling fan, his time in the Marines. They focused on that a lot. Just great, great stuff. They really made this match feel like a big deal. So kudos to TNA for doing that. I still don't buy Gunner as somebody who could be the top babyface in the company. You know, maybe he could be a number two, number three. I don't see him as the top guy. But they did everything they could here to make him feel like a number one. That's all you could ask for. Show opened with Delusional Dixie and her brigade in the ring. They called out MVP. He wanted an answer to his challenge from the week before to a lethal lockdown match, 4-on-4. Team MVP against Team Dixie, with the winning team giving that person full control over wrestling operations of TNA. Magnus accepted the challenge on Dixie's behalf, said he would not be in the match. Instead, he'd be busy defending his TNA title against Samoa Joe after he beats Gunner tonight on the show. He called MVP a cheap 50-cent knockoff and said that he would make MVP his biatch. That's what he said, biatch. Then were fighting words for MVP. He attacked Magnus. EC3 ran out to attack MVP. That brought out the Wolves. Rockstar Spud had security hold them back. Gunner came out. This all ended with EC3 being left in the ring by himself. He got laid out. Backstage afterwards, he was not happy. He confronted Magnus. He was very pissed off that Magnus ran away. So there continues to be dissension between the two of them. I wonder, though, if TNA sees EC3 the way they're booking him, if they see him long-term as a babyface, and that's kind of the direction this is all going in. Because I think that would be a huge mistake. I mean, there's nothing at all likable about the guy right now, except maybe his theme music. But I do like what they're doing so far. They actually got him in a prominent position on the show. You know, so when he first came over to TNA, it's like, okay, they picked up the NXT reject from WWE. Here we go again. To their credit, you know, they put everything behind the guy. They built him up. He comes out there every week. I say main event position. I mean, he's part of whatever this main event faction is on this show. And he develops a little more personality every week, a little more character. He makes me care a little bit more about him every single week. I still think it would be a mistake to turn him face at some point if that's the plan. But I like what they're doing with him so far. Samoa Joe beat the Bromans and DJ Zima Ion. 3-on-1 handicap match. Muscle Buster to Ion. Led to the Coquina Clutch for the tap out. I hate it when WWE or when TNA do this. They put their tag team champions in a handicap match against the babyface, and they get their asses handed to them. But whatever. You know, they want to build Joe up as this killing machine, I guess, heading into lockdown. So it is what it is. I just wonder, you know, why them? Is there nobody else they could have used in this spot? There were no other two guys they could have put together in a handicap match to let Joe just annihilate them. It had to be your tag team champions. Sam Shaw caught Christy Hemme talking to a stagehand backstage. She was having some kind of mechanical problem. And she walked away. So Sam Shaw comes up from behind the guy, chokes him out, throws him into a wall, and leaves him lame. Just left him for dead. So this would be a recurring theme throughout the show. Kurt Angle, we were told, will be inducted into the TNA Hall of Fame, finally, on Impact this upcoming Thursday. So some competition for the NXT special, it looks like. Then came a really weird segment. We had Bobby Roode and James Storm together backstage. Keep in mind that Roode and Storm have been feuding for years now. It's been years since Bobby Roode cost James Storm the championship, turn heel, split up beer money. He actually cost him the championship multiple times. They've spilled blood. A blood feud, a literal blood feud these two guys have had. And so here they're sitting together backstage like none of that ever happened. And Bobby Roode starts talking about the big announcement that he's here to make. How he's been going through a tough time in his life, the history between him and Storm, the good, the bad, all the times they've had together, and that he takes responsibility for what happened between them. It's all his fault. That's on him. And Storm can kind of sense where Roode is going with this in terms of what the announcement may be, that he's going to probably announce his retirement. Tries to talk him out of it. This guy whose guts he hates. And he's trying to talk him out of leaving the company. That's one less competitor for him. But he's trying to convince him not to do it. And then they hugged, and Bobby Roode walked off. Now, I actually like this segment, personally. But James Storm is an awfully forgiving guy. At least I thought so until the end of the show. So I guess he really wasn't. But in this segment, he was. It was only a few months ago on Impact when Roode attacked him in a bar. It's not even like, okay, these guys feuded 2 years ago. Time heals all wounds. It's all good. They were just feuding 3 months ago on Impact. James Storm got attacked in a bar. I think he had a beer bottle smacked over his head. I mean, these guys have hated each other's guts on TV for so long. I don't know. It's just very bizarre to see them almost chummy here in this segment. MVP met backstage with, hey, it's Austin Aries. That's my new name for him because he appears on this show so little, and he's the X Division champion, in case you forgot. When I see him, my first reaction is, hey, it's Austin Aries. So that's my new name for him. MVP wants him on his team for Lethal Lockdown. Aries wants some time to think about it. That's it. Nothing more to it than that. Gail Kim beat Madison Rayne in a non-title street fight. There was a spot where Gail Kim did her figure four leg lock around the steel post, and the referee started counting, and so she broke the hold. Why the fuck would the referee count in a street fight? This was not explained. There was another spot here. It may have been the one right after this. Gail Kim went and fetched a steel chair. Madison had her legs around the post. She went over. I guess she was going to hit her knee. And instead, Madison kicked the chair hard into Gail Kim's face. I mean, it was brutal. They showed a replay of it. It looked bad. I mean, it looked good, but it looked bad. So I'm guessing that's where her nose got bloodied, because at the end of the match, it looked like her nose may have been broken. I'm not sure if it actually was or not. So Gail Kim got the pin after knocking out Madison Rayne with a belt shot from behind. She had been distracted by Lady Tappet ringside, so hit her with the belt, 1, 2, 3, and off she went. To the back, we see Mr. Anderson fresh off his casket match blow off with Bully Ray last week, showing pictures of his twins on his phone to Christy Hemme. Of course, Sam Shaw did not like this. Elsewhere, Gunnar and James Storm had a heart-to-heart backstage. Storm talked about how proud he was of him, and Gunnar gave Storm his other briefcase with the tag team title contract in it and said, "Listen, after I win the world title tonight, you and I are going for the tag team belts." Yeah, I don't think that's happening anymore. Just a hunch. That's when we went to the Bobby Roode segment. He came out. Total babyface reaction. They were chanting Bobby at one point. They were trying to play this off like he was really going to retire. He couldn't take it anymore. The kind of person that it turned him into. He doesn't want to work for Dixie, so he's done. And he went to walk off. Dixie came out. She was delusional Dixie. She said, "Listen, you can't leave. You can't. That's not your decision to make." And Bobby Roode said, "I'm out of here. I don't want to work for you anymore." And so she was all desperate, and she ended up offering him 10% of the company if he agreed to join her team, Team Dixie, at Lockdown, and their team won. She wants him to captain the team, and if you win, you get 10% of TNA. You know, DDP asked the Sharks on Shark Tank for $200,000 in exchange for 5% equity in DDP Yoga. I'm pretty sure that's worth more than 10% of TNA. But Bobby Roode accepted. All of a sudden, he changed his mind. He said, "Sure, fine, I'll do it." And then he warned her. He said, "If you screw me over somehow, if you screw me over, I'm going to spend the rest of my life destroying yours." And he walked off. So it was a strong angle. We can, you know, 10% of TNA, like I said, what's that really worth these days? But Bobby Roode is staying put for now. He'll captain Team Dixie at the pay-per-view. Jeremy Borash was backstage. He was interviewing some German dude. I didn't get his name. I think it said something about gut check. Are they still doing gut check? I thought they did away with that. This kind of reminded me, you know, they had that British boot camp show. That's where Rockstar Spud came from. At least now Spud has a role on the show. For the longest time, they did shit. They did nothing with Spud. It was almost like, why even have the show? So apparently they did something in Germany. This guy won. They cut off his interview because Sam Shaw jumped Mr. Anderson from behind. And they never spoke of this guy again, by the way. So a very important person, this German fellow, whoever he is. So yeah, he laid out Anderson. And unfortunately, poor Christy Hemme was caught in the crossfire. She got knocked out. Somehow she was out cold, completely unconscious. And so Sam Shaw picked her up and carried her away. Savage and Hogan and Elizabeth on the main event in 89, this was not. The Wolves had a match with Bad Influence. Bad Influence, by the way, very happy that Bobby Roode, staying put, going to captain Team Dixie. They were lobbying to be on the team, and Bobby Roode said, "Listen, you know, you guys got to go out there, win your match, prove yourselves, show me something." So they went out there, and they proceeded to lose to the Wolves. Really good match. I enjoyed, you know, these are the two teams. If the Wolves are going to go up against anybody in TNA right now, Bad Influence are the only guys, I think, that could really go up against and just have really good matches every single week. The tag team division in WWE is not even that strong right now, and it's still a lot stronger than the tag team division in TNA. You know, I can name the Wolves, I can name Bad Influence, and the Bromans. And that's it. The well runs dry. I'd have to really sit here and think about what the other tag teams are. So, for what this was, first match on TV between the two teams, I thought it was really good. The Wolves got the win. I really do wonder about the future for Daniels and Kazarian. You know, both of their contracts are coming due in April. And Daniels did an interview with a magazine last month and said it's really going to be up to TNA what happens, because he has no plans to go anywhere else. He is very happy with his position working with Frankie Kazarian in TNA. They don't want to go anywhere. I don't know if Kazarian feels the same way. I would imagine he does. They look like they're having fun. Every time they go out there, they have fun. And it's in TNA's court. The ball's in their court. He doesn't know what's going to happen. You know, if they want to cut his salary the way they did with AJ Styles, you know, would the guy want to stay? That's really what it boils down to. I hope they do. I hope they stay. They're too good of a team to break them up. Another segment with Sam Shaw. By this point, I was tired of this already. You know, the Sam Shaw character really intrigued me. I said that on the show. I looked forward to seeing where it was going to go. It was something different. And I'm already done with it. Like, this is just completely ridiculous. So he's backstage with Christy Hemme. He lays her down on you know, the whatever the hell it was, table, whatever. She comes to. He starts to lean in like he's going to kiss her. She wakes up. She doesn't know where she is or what happened. And at that point, he notices the camera off in the distance, and he goes to chase after the cameraman, and they immediately cut away. Very typical, immediate, abrupt TNA cutaway, so we don't know what happened. This whole thing is so goofy. It's too goofy for me. You know, like, I don't know. And the guy never wrestles. He wrestled one match on TV, and it was an angle. It wasn't even a real match. He wrestled an enhancement guy, and they had Christy at ringside, and they showed more of Christy's face, I think, than they did the actual match. So I'm left asking myself, like, Bad News Barrett, okay, what's the end game here? When does the guy actually step in the ring and do something? Because at some point, you got to get in the ring and wrestle. I don't care how interesting your character is. You got to do something with the guy. He was mildly intriguing at first. Now it's just dumb. You know, just do something different with the guy. Enough with the Christy bullshit. We got another creepy Willow vignette, Jeff Hardy's Omega gimmick. I'm pretty creeped out watching these vignettes, so I guess that accomplishes whatever they're looking to do. I still don't know if the announcement is going to be made. Well, I shouldn't get ahead of myself here. There is Jeff Hardy's coming back. If you didn't know, oops, now you do. I'm not going to tell you when. I'm not going to tell you what he's doing. I think everybody already knew he was coming back. I said that on my show. I said the only reason he was gone was because he was not allowed to travel overseas to the UK because he's a convicted felon. So obviously he was going to come back. Jeff Hardy is coming back. And I wonder if he's coming back as Willow or if he's going to come back as Jeff Hardy, but he's going to do this dual character deal like Joe Park and Abyss. That still has not been explained. I don't know the answer. Is he going to pull double duty and do both characters? Because I don't think the people are, you know, people are going to probably know it's him anyway, based on his body type, his mannerisms. Once he goes out before a crowd, I think it'll be pretty obvious who it is. But he's still a big star, so it's kind of weird that if they're going to bring Jeff Hardy back, you want to bring him back as Jeff Hardy. He's been a big star for years and years. It would be like, you know, Hulk Hogan. If Hulk Hogan has this 20, 30-year career, and all of a sudden he comes back to TV one day with a mask over his face, calling himself Mr. America, it's not like people aren't going to know exactly who it is. And Mr. America probably isn't going to be around for very long. So I don't think that you can really get away with doing something like that. If they want to do both characters simultaneously, maybe the guy's schizophrenic. I don't know what that says about the medical condition of the people in TNA. If you have a second guy going around thinking he's two different people, that might be a little too goofy, but we'll see. We'll see where it goes. The vignettes, though, are very well done. You know, I guess they're going for that creepy Wyatt-type effect, the way they filmed them in the woods and everything else. And it works. I think they're actually very well done, and they have my interest piqued. Main event was Magnus and Gunnar for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. Mike Tenay told us at the beginning of the match it would be contested under Magnus rules, which is basically just a fancy way of saying Raven's rules, no disqualification. At one point, Magnus had knocked Gunnar out to the floor. He called out EC3, Rockstar Spud. Instead, James Storm came out. The Wolves came out. They all brawled. Match continued. He hit the big elbow, Magnus did, which I think is his finisher still. The Randy Savage elbow off the top rope. Only got a near fall. Gunnar kicked out. And EC3 came back out. The Bromans came out. Wolves, James Storm also came back out. So you can't have a Magnus match without having a whole bunch of people run in. So they all came out. Match continued on. Gunnar hit a power bomb. He went to the top rope for a big headbutt. Rockstar Spud came down to the ring, and he got involved. At one point, there was a near fall where Gunnar had the title won. Spud took Magnus's boot, put it on the rope. Gunnar went after him. Anyway, James Storm comes back out to even the odds. James Storm's going after Rockstar Spud. Can't get to him. He's going to keep him at bay. So now, back in the ring, fans are into the match. Fans are reacting to it. There's some more near falls. Now Gunner's trying to get himself psyched up. And he did this deal where he headbutted the top turnbuckle about 10 times in succession. Just bashed his brains in 10 times to psych himself up. That got the crowd into it. He went after Magnus and laid him out. Went to the top rope. He was going to finish him off. Rockstar Spud, again, he's still out there. He's getting involved. He stands in the way. He's like, nope, you're not coming off the top. James Storm comes in the ring. He throws Rockstar Spud out. And you immediately know something's about to happen, because instead of getting out of the ring and allowing Gunner to do whatever it is he's going to do off the top rope, James Storm stays in the ring. He tries to rally the fans to start clapping their hands. He's standing right there. Off the top rope comes Gunner for, I guess, what was supposed to be a big splash. And on the way down, James Storm catches him with the Last Call super kick. Yes, poor Gunner, betrayed by his best friend. Magnus goes for the pin. 1, 2, 3. Retains the championship. A lot of heat on James Storm for turning on his partner at the finish. And they immediately went off the air. And that's one of the things I think that TNA has to really change. This was a big angle. This is a big match. They did a hell of a job promoting this match throughout the 2 hours. They had the fans into it. They had some people believing that, you know, Gunner might actually walk away with the title. And they did a major heel turn on this show. James Storm has been babyface for years. And now he's gone back to the dark side. Big heel turn at the end. And they did show a replay of the kick, but it still felt very rushed. Like, they immediately went off the air. They don't give these angles a chance to breathe. Even if it was just 30 more seconds. And I guess that's just a Spike TV thing, because they usually cut Impact off right, you know, when they're supposed to go off, 11:05, whatever it is. I guess they don't have the same leeway that WWE does with USA to go off the air whenever the hell they want. You know, some weeks Raw will go off at 11:05, other weeks it'll go off at 11:13. This Monday, I would imagine they're going to go off the air right on time so that people turn to the network. TNA, they have that habit of, you know, doing a major angle at the end of the show, or somebody makes a shocking announcement, and then right away, boom, they cut away and the show goes off the air. They got to work on that if they can. Maybe just structure the show a little bit differently. And if Spike's not willing to give them the extra 30 or 60 seconds, then work it into the show yourself. You got to give these things a chance to breathe. This was a big angle here, and obviously Gunner and James Storm are going to be feuding going forward. I imagine Gunner will end up on MVP's Lethal Lockdown team. Storm will probably end up on Team Dixie with Bobby Roode. So maybe we are seeing the reunion of Beer Money. Maybe they're going to be, maybe they'll do some tag team matches together. And actually, you know what? Gunner gave James Storm the briefcase before their match. So I wonder if now it becomes an issue of, well, this no longer belongs to Gunner. He gave it to me. This is my tag team title shot. And him and Bobby Roode team up again and they win the tag team titles. Could happen. You could see Beer Money feuding with the Wolves after lockdown. So that was Impact. I liked the show overall. There was some goofy stuff. The Sam Shaw stuff did not work for me at all. But they did a hell of a job building up Gunner throughout the entire show. The main event was a good match, and the heel turn at the end was done well. Let's move on to the mailbag and your questions, please. You can email them to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. You could also send audio questions. Haven't gotten one in a while. Attach it in MP3 format. Keep it to about 30 seconds or so if you want me to possibly air it here on the show. Gareth from Ireland. This Monday is one of the most important nights in WWE history. I also see it as the night of a new era. As John Cena said on the Steve Austin show, the company will be moving to a more action-oriented era with less talking. Do you agree that the new era is close, and what would you call it? I don't know that it's close. I think it's already here. You know, you could see a changing of the guard happening right now. Doesn't mean that guys like Cena and Orton are going to go away. but you see new faces kind of moving up to the top. You got guys like Bryan, Cesaro, Roman Reigns, Bray Wyatt. You can see it. It's kind of bubbling up. I would call it the NXT era. You know? They had the new generation in the mid-90s, which was led by Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. Well, this is the next generation. You can call it the NXT era. Gareth also says he has an idea for some thick guys. That's what he calls them. Samoa Joe, Kevin Steen. He says they could be brought in as part of the Wyatt family and dress them up in cult clothing, and it would not look out of place in Vince McMahon's eyes. Do you think that this would work? No. I do not think that Samoa Joe joining the Wyatt family would work. Unless he's the distant Samoan cousin twice removed that they never knew they had. Cole from Philadelphia. Here we are with a rising star in Roman Reigns, and some IWC fans are claiming the only reason Reigns is getting a push is because he's related to The Rock. If that were the case, shouldn't the Usos be three-time tag team champions by now? I want you to introduce me to those fans who think that. Introduce me to those people, and I will point and laugh at them. Some fans are just going to complain for the sake of complaining. Just because they like it. You can't tell me that a guy as big as Roman Reigns, who looks the way that Roman Reigns does, would never get a chance unless he was already related to somebody in wrestling. Anybody who believes that is full of shit. And why The Rock? Why is it because of The Rock? His father, Roman Reigns' father, was Sika of the Wild Samoans, a very established pro wrestler in his own day. Why is he only getting a shot because he's related to The Rock? It makes no sense, because these clowns don't know what they're talking about. Dylan from Louisiana, while looking through an article on WWE.com on the 50 greatest stars of WCW, I came across Ultimo Dragon. I remember when he debuted in WCW with Sonny Ono, he had quite the collection of title belts with him that the announcers claimed he had amassed from around the world. The article included a picture of Dragon, Ono, and the belts, and many look like obvious knockoffs of other belts, namely the NWA World title and the WWE Intercontinental title. I've always wondered if some or all of those titles were legit, or if they were just a gimmick with fake titles to help boost his debut. No, they were legit. They were mostly belts from different promotions in Mexico and Japan. What happened is, and I had to look up the name of it, I knew it was a tournament, I couldn't remember what. If it was the Triple Crown, it was called the J Crown. There was a tournament in Japan called the J Crown, which unified 8 different championships. So he had possession of the physical belts. You know, he won the tournament. He had physical possession of the belt, and he would take them all over the place with him wherever he would wrestle. And at one point, he had 10 titles, including the WCW Cruiserweight title, and there was an NWA title in there somewhere that he won too. I don't remember what the name of the belt was. It was probably some kind of lightweight belt. But no, it was very, very much legit. It was not just a prop for the gimmick to make him look important. They were titles that he actually won. This is from Robert. There has been a lot of talk lately around the NBA about who is on the Mount Rushmore of the NBA. I was wondering, who is on your Mount Rushmore of wrestling? On mine personally, if that's what we're talking about, you have Hulk Hogan, Bret Hart, Steve Austin, and The Rock. Those would be my 4. That's just me personally. I can identify with each of those eras. The Hogan era, because I grew up during that era. And Hogan, whether you like him or not, you can't have a Mount Rushmore of wrestling without Hulk Hogan. So he's on there. And Bret Hart, to me, you know, I also was a big fan during that era when they transitioned away from Hogan and the Monsters and everybody else. And you started seeing Bret and some of the other smaller younger guys. Bret was the face of that new generation era. Just that kind of went right into the Attitude Era. Austin was the face of the Attitude Era, turned the whole company around. And The Rock also was, if he wasn't on the exact same level as Austin, he was right just behind him. He was right there with him. And so there you go. You know, if you have 4 faces, those would be the 4 that I would put on there. Now, if you're asking me who should be on the Mount Rushmore of wrestling, I'd go with Bruno, Hogan, Austin, and Cena. Because I think those are the 4 guys that you identify for their respective eras as being the biggest stars. And you can go back before Bruno. There were a lot of wrestlers before him. You know, but if we're just starting with Bruno, right? WWE champion, 8 years running, big star. Big draw, especially in the Northeast, which is primarily where WWE ran back in the day. They went up and down the East Coast, New York, Pennsylvania, Boston, you know, up and down. So you got to put Bruno on there. Bruno was a big deal. Hogan, Austin. And I know it may be unpopular with some people, but again, like him or not, John Cena has been on top in WWE for almost a decade. That is a long time. And all the titles that he won and everything else, doesn't matter. He has been the biggest star in the company for almost a decade. Doesn't matter whose fault you think it is. Oh, he holds people down, even though there's no evidence of that. You know, blame Vince McMahon. It's his company. He can push anybody he wants. He can call me on the phone one day and say, hey, you, I want you to be the champion. Okay. It's his company. He can do whatever he wants. So it doesn't matter who you blame. But when Cena goes away, it does affect business. You know, ratings go down. Tickets don't sell as well to the live events. I don't know about pay-per-view numbers. And when Cena came back at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view in October, that pay-per-view did a bigger number than Hell in a Cell did the year before. Now, was that because Daniel Bryan was wrestling Randy Orton in the main event? I'd like to think that because I like Bryan. But I don't know if that's true because Bryan already had a couple of pay-per-view matches before that with Randy Orton, and they did shit. So, is that Randy Orton's fault? Maybe. Maybe people just don't want to see Randy Orton. Maybe that's why Survivor Series bombed. But the point is, John Cena came back from his latest injury on that show against Del Rio out of nowhere. He got a world title match against Alberto Del Rio. And all I know is that pay-per-view did better than expected. So there's something to be said for even pay-per-view numbers. You know, the guy, he's the biggest draw in wrestling for almost a decade. You can't do a so-called Mount Rushmore of wrestling without having John Cena's face on it. I know that annoys people. Can you imagine if they actually had a Mount Rushmore carved out somewhere and John Cena's face was on it? Can you imagine how much that would piss people off? If they have to drive by that every single day and see his smiling face on a mountain somewhere. And finally here, I have a short mailbag this week since we had a lot to cover, but this comes from Joseph. With all this talk of a tag team resurgence in wrestling right now, who would you rank as the most underrated tag team in WWE history? Yeah, I gave that some thought. That's a loaded question. There have been a lot of great tag teams in WWE over the years, but I'm going to throw a name out there that you might not expect. I'm going to go with Hercules and Paul Roma. Power and Glory. They should have had a run with the tag team belts. They were only together for about a year. I know Roma left the company after that. But I think they had one of the coolest finishes. Hercules, here's the thing. Hercules was going nowhere. Hercules had been a singles guy. He was a heel. Then he became a babyface. They weren't doing anything with him. Paul Roma had largely just been a journeyman wrestler in WWE. He was a job guy. And it always kind of made me wonder why that was, because Paul Roma was a guy who used to be a bodybuilder. He had this great physique. He looked the part, I guess maybe because he was small. He wasn't a tall guy. But he kept himself in good shape, you know, in a body era. So I don't know why they never really did anything with him. They put him in a tag team with Jim Powers for a while. They were the Young Stallions. They didn't really do much. So they weren't going anywhere. And they put them together as Power and Glory. Hercules being the power, Paul Roma being the glory hog and the guy who looked good and was full of himself and all that kind of stuff. But their finish was great because Hercules would do a superplex. He would superplex their opponent off the top rope on one side of the ring, and Roma would come flying off the other side from the top rope with a splash. And he'd already be in mid-flight before the guy even landed on the mat. So the way they would time it looked awesome. They were actually getting cheers when they would do their finish. So people were into it. It's too bad they never had a shot. I thought they worked well off each other and didn't last very long, but I think that they were one of the more underrated teams in history. You don't hear about them. You probably hear about them more as singles guys, but they had a run as a tag team, and they were actually pretty kick-ass, so I'm going to go with them.
History has been made here!
This week in wrestling history, 36 years ago this week, on February 20th, 1978, Bob Backlund beat superstar Billy Graham at Madison Square Garden to win the WWWF Championship, kicking off a nearly six-year run with the title, if you don't count Antonio Inoki beating him for the belt in Japan in 79, which WWE does not. The move he used to beat Graham for the title, an atomic drop. Imagine that. 29 years ago this week, on February 18, 1985, The War to Settle the Score aired live on MTV. This was at the height of the rock and wrestling era. Hulk Hogan with pop star Cyndi Lauper in his corner against Rowdy Roddy Piper. Big match at Madison Square Garden. We had a ref bump. Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff came in and joined Piper, beat down Hulk Hogan. And when they suddenly started to threaten Cyndi Lauper, that was too much for Mr. T to take. Mr. T was there as a guest in the front row. He came to her aid. Hogan and Mr. T then fought Piper and Orndorff until police officers broke him up. This set up the tag team main event next month at the very first WrestleMania. On the same show that night, Leilani Kai beat Wendi Richter for the WWE Women's Championship, which Richter would win back at WrestleMania. 21 years ago this week, on February 18, 1993, Kerry Von Erich, the Texas Tornado, at the age of 33, shot himself to death on his father's ranch in Texas. He was facing possible jail time after violating his probation on drug charges. Cocaine possession, to be exact. Cocaine was a big drug of choice for wrestlers back then, especially in WWE in the 80s. When they instituted their first drug policy, it was 1987. They didn't test for steroids. They didn't test for anything other than cocaine. So you know that in the 80s, at the height, at the peak of all this, for WWE to institute a drug policy for one drug, you know there's a problem. So Kerry had the same problem. He developed a really bad drug problem after having his foot amputated. He had a motorcycle accident back in 86. And the constant pain, I guess, from that, he was having some tax problems. And between that and the drug charges, I guess it was just too much for him. Four of his brothers had already died before him, two by suicide. He was not the first. He shot himself in the chest with the same gun he bought for his dad, Fritz Von Erich, as a Christmas gift a few years earlier. He drove to his dad's ranch. He hugged him, told him he loved him, said he needed a quiet spot to do some thinking, and then he disappeared for a while, and his dad found him later on. That whole family is just one gigantic tragedy. You could go to a Hollywood director and pitch a story on the Von Erich family, and they would never believe it was real. You know, either that or it would just be too damn sad for them to ever film it. 19 years ago this week, on February 18, 1995, Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert died of a heart attack in his apartment in Puerto Rico, also at the age of 33, just like Kerry Von Erich. The angle that Gilbert is most famous for was during his time in Memphis. He was feuding with Jerry the King Lawler. And on television, he and his brother Doug Gilbert had just been fired. I don't know what the storyline reason was for it. I just know they were fired. And so afterwards, out in the parking lot, they hit Lawler with their car, which actually belonged to Brian Lee's girlfriend. Brian Lee being the fake Undertaker, for those of you who remember that whole thing. I guess what happened is Gilbert and his brother showed up that day in a truck. Truck was too big to use for the angle. You're going to run down Jerry Lawler with a truck, you're going to kill him. So they couldn't use the truck, so they went to Brian Lee. They begged him. They said, please, let me use your car. And so he let them use the car. And Gilbert did a shoot interview in the early 90s, which was unheard of at that time. For somebody to be out of character and do an interview like that, it was the first real shoot interview ever done by a pro wrestler. I can't find a copy of it. I wish I could, but it does exist. In the interview, he talked about coming up with the whole idea for the angle with Lawler. They were in the car, driving somewhere, pitched it. Lawler was cool with it. And he should have driven the car first to get a feel for it before going out there and doing the whole stunt on live television. He didn't do that. And so when they did the stunt, he underestimated how powerful the car was, and it went too fast. And I guess Lawler couldn't time his jump just right. Because if you time the jump, you could still get hurt, but it's actually pretty safe. Roddy Piper did it when he did that backlot brawl with Goldust at WrestleMania 12. So Lawler hit the windshield hard, and then he rolled off, hit the ground even harder. And if you watch the footage on YouTube, because the whole angle is on YouTube, if you look at it, it looks like the car slows down a little bit right after they hit Lawler. They kind of slow down, and then they speed off. That's because Eddie wanted Doug to check to make sure they didn't just kill Jerry Lawler. And Doug thought they did. He thought they just killed the King. This was Eddie's idol, growing up as a wrestling fan, and he thought, shit, I just killed the guy. On live TV, no less. So eventually they came back to the studio. They found out that Lawler was, in fact, still alive. But he was hurt pretty bad, and the cops, somebody called the cops, and the cops were on their way. So they took off. They didn't want to get arrested. And Lawler, who had a broken hip because of what happened, he had to no-sell it and pretend that he was fine so the cops didn't think that these guys really just tried to kill him. So anyway, Eddie wasn't just a wrestler. He was a booker. He was the head booker for Eastern Championship Wrestling. Gave it up. Paul Heyman took over, turned it into what would later become Extreme Championship Wrestling. And the night before he died, he had been wrestling and booking down in Puerto Rico since he pretty much burned bridges everywhere else he had worked. So he was down in Puerto Rico, and his final match that night was against a wrestling bear. Can you imagine what the ASPCA would have to say about that if they ever brought back the wrestling bear gimmick? Maybe that's why he died. I mean, hell, if I had to wrestle a bear, I'd probably have died of a heart attack too. 18 years ago this week, on February 17, 1996, ECW Cyber Slam is held at the ECW Arena, the site of Brian Pillman's debut. Pillman debuted, he cut a work shoot promo on Eric Bischoff in WCW, claiming that he was fired from the company. At one point, he went to yank his dick out and urinate in the ring. Thankfully, security stopped him. Then he beat up a fan that was planted in the crowd to kind of sell the angle even more as being real. I mentioned the I Respect You Booker Man angle with Kevin Sullivan and Pillman on last week's Sound Off. This was just another thing, another angle to further Pillman's loose cannon gimmick at the time. He was committed to making this work, you could tell. The hilarious thing about it is that Pillman actually got Eric Bischoff in WCW to give him his release on paper as a way to, I guess, be more believable among the wrestlers. They were trying to, you know, work all the wrestlers. And because it was a legal release, he used it to sign a contract with WWE a few months later. That sounds like something TNA would do, but that's what happened. 14 years ago this week, on February 20th, 2000, Bill Goldberg, who was in WCW at the time, appeared on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno and said that he would put up $100,000 of his own money if Stone Cold Steve Austin would agree to wrestle or fight him. He said they can meet anywhere, back alley, parking lot, wherever. And a few days later on the Howard Stern Show, Stone Cold made an appearance, and so Stern asked him about it, and Stone Cold said, yeah, we could wrestle. We could wrestle when Goldberg makes it to the big leagues. WCW had sent Goldberg to The Tonight Show to issue the challenge, but boy, Goldberg came off looking like a puss when that was over. 12 years ago this week, on February 17, 2002, WWE's No Way Out pay-per-view. It was the debut of the NWO. Vince McMahon had wanted to inject a lethal dose of poison into his product. I don't know. I think he does a pretty good job of that with some of the booking decisions these days. But yeah, he brought back Hulk Hogan, 9 years gone from WWE. Hogan made his big return. Kevin Nash, Scott Hall. Scott Hall, of course, didn't last very long. 8 years ago this week, on February 19, 2006, it was the WWE No Way Out pay-per-view again, this time with Kurt Angle against The Undertaker in the main event for the World Heavyweight Championship. Nearly 30 minutes these guys went. Maybe the best match in WWE all year in 2006. Angle pinned Undertaker shoulders to the mat while he was locked in a triangle choke. This match should have been the world title match of WrestleMania 22 that year. Not with Angle going over, you can't break the streak, so the finish would have been different. But this really should have been a WrestleMania match. I mean, especially, Undertaker against Mark Henry. That's what they came up with that year. Undertaker against Mark Henry. Kurt Angle in a triple threat match that went all of 8 minutes because they had their time cut. Hindsight being what it is, I think it's safe to say these guys deserve better, and that would have been a much better match. And finally, 5 years ago this week, on February 20, 2009, Scotty Goldman, the former Colt Cabana, was released by WWE. He had been basically a job guy on the SmackDown brand at the time. I can't even say he was mid-card. You know, he really was. He was like an enhancement guy. Supposedly, he was told, creative has nothing for you. A guy who could wrestle or do comedy. And they were so creatively bankrupt, they just decided, we can't work with this. We may as well let the guy go. And off he went. And to Colt's credit, he's created this little empire for himself. He's got his own podcast. He's got his own merchandise store online that he sells a whole bunch of shit. I think he actually has a web show called Creative Has Nothing For You. He does these $5 wrestling things, so, you know, he seems to be doing well for himself. And I think I mentioned this on the Sound Off a few weeks ago. He's been spotted quite a bit recently at the Performance Center down in Orlando. So I don't know if there's still the chance that WWE could bring him in to do something. Maybe they bring him in to do something with the network. I think there's still a lot of value in Colt Cabana if they want to bring him in and do something. And that's the Sound Off for this week, episode 315. If you have questions for the mailbag, please email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter, @solemonster, especially during the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view this weekend, Raw Monday night, big night. I'll be buying the network, I'm sure, as many of you will, and we'll be tweeting out thoughts. So follow me on there, @solemonster. We're all over Facebook as well. We have a private discussion group on there. You can apply for membership. Just type in the full name of the podcast. It'll come right up. And feel free to send me a friend request. We are on YouTube. Sound Off Extra episodes are on there. You never know when a new one may go up. There's also classic episodes of the Sound Off, episodes 1 through 8. All of the shows, basically, that I did in 2007, you could find them on YouTube. Type in the Solemonster, all one word. That's my username. Or just type in Solemonster Sounds Off, and I'm sure you will find the official channel from there. Leave a review for the show, if you will, in Stitcher or iTunes. Either way. It's one way to support the show. And stream the show on Stitcher every now and then, too, because when you do that, it helps our ranking on there. We've been climbing the charts, so check us out on there. And also, back to the YouTube channel for a second. I did an interview a couple of weeks ago with Brad Gilmore. He has a podcast called The Brad Gilmore Show. A really cool guy, wanted to talk about WrestleMania, TNA. We spent half an hour talking. It was a lot of fun. And he let me put the audio of that interview up on our YouTube channel. So if you missed it, if you want to check out my interview on the Brad Gilmore Show, again, it was a great discussion about a whole bunch of different things. It's up on YouTube, the full thing. You can give that a listen if you have a few minutes to spare. So that's going to do it. We will be back with episode 316. Interesting number. Next weekend. Full thoughts on the Elimination Chamber. Hulk Hogan's big comeback. If other people make a comeback, we'll talk about that. And full thoughts, initial thoughts, on the WWE Network. This is a big week. This is a big week in wrestling history, whether you're a WWE fan or not. So we'll have the follow-up to all that on the show next weekend. Until then, be well, stay safe, enjoy the pay-per-view this weekend, and we'll see you right back here next week. Take care, guys.
You've been listening to the Solemonster Sounds Off, giving you the good.
Sierra Hotel. India. Echo. Lima.
The bad.
And I am back to headline WrestleMania, so deal with it.
And the ugly.
Then they have a hat. The hat itself is actually nice. It looks like a nice hat.
What's wrong with this is it's a beard baseball hat. The entire brim of the hat is a hairy beard. Who the fuck would wear this?
Well, mostly the good.
You can't disregard the fans. You can't disrespect the talent. I think we all want to see a change.
Solemonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, on thesolemonster.com, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes.
Solemonster Sound Off.